Potgieter and Paddy are separated by more than three decades, but both had a reason to celebrate on Sunday. Aldrich Potgieter claimed his first PGA Tour victory at the Rocket Classic in the dramatic five-hole playoff. 20-year-old South African making an early statement by becoming one of the youngest winners in Tour history. And Patrick Harrington is still making statements at 53. He won a second US Senior Open by overcoming Miguel Angel Jimenez, Stuart Sink and Roger Maltbe. We'll explain that and have the best moments of what has been a major month as Golf Today gets underway.
Golf Today.
Welcome into this Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Ryan Lavner. And it took a while to get there last night, Ryan, with a five-hole playoff, but we finally felt as though we had a coming out party for a guy people have been talking about since he was 17 years old when he won the British Amateur.
Yeah, Aldrich Potgieter is such an exciting prospect because we've already started to see the progression over the past 7 months. He kicked away the tournament at the Dead Bank late last year. We saw him what happened at Torrey Pines, shot a million in that final round when he was in the final group as well. In Mexico, lost in the playoff when he couldn't capitalize on the par five. I think he learned a lot Sunday at the Rocket Classic, dealing with the nerves, dealing with his tendencies. It certainly feels like for a player who's just 20 years old, this could be the first of many PGA Tour victories. Aldrich Potgieter, just 20 years old, doesn't turn 21 until September, becomes the seventh youngest PGA Tour winner since he began keeping the stats in 1983. Here's what Potgieter had to say after his breakthrough victory in Motown.
It was a big grind. I mean, it was a very long day and kind of couldn't get ahead of myself, and I didn't get off to the best start, so I knew there was a lot of holes still available, still to get back, and there was a switch that kind of went off when I was actually, when I lost the lead, and I kind of felt like, okay, I can kind of chase something, so I kind of had to pull myself out of the environment I was in before those first couple of holes and get in that chase mode where I can kind of play some different golf. Golf that I played the first 3 days. It's very different sleeping on a lead as well. I think if you're one or two shots back, you kind of have the mindset of, okay, I need to play well, and there's five or six guys who are right behind me, two shots off the bat. So I kind of need to kind of feel what the day was going to be like. Saw some guys up early, getting up that leaderboard, and the guy I was playing with, Max, he was also playing really good golf. So once, after that five or six holes, when I lost the lead, I kind of figured, okay, we got to change. We got to play like we played the last three. And that was my intention going into the day as well. But it's so hard to commit and really trust to do that. It's you kind of need it. It's such a big mental switch you need to put on. And once I did that, it was kind of a big game changer.
Lastly, did you throw the ball away to a fan?
I did.
Why did you do that?
I don't know. It was just in the moment. I was just pumped up. I know my grandma's probably going to be quite mad at me. I give her all my stuff that I've won with, so she's not going to be pretty happy.
And Potgieter becomes the ninth first-time winner on the PGA Tour this season. That's a list that began with Thomas Dietrich back at the WM Phoenix Open. Of course, Ben Griffin, the only first-time winner who became a second-time winner on that list. There was also a major championship played this weekend on the Senior Tour, the US Senior Open. Let's take some of the highlights from the Broadmoor. This was Stuart Sink on the par 4 17th for birdie in the co-lead.
Stays one shot back of Patrick Harrington, who stays here with his approach shot into the home hole.
He did say afterwards that he took Hale Irwin's advice to hit the shot you would hit if you were one shot behind instead of one shot in front, and he sticks it in there close. This is Sink on 18 for birdie, the tie. Does not get it there, and that leaves Harrington two putts for the title. And he joins some pretty rarefied company. That is his second victory in the US Senior Open. Miller Barber, of course, the only three-time champion of the Senior Open, which began back in 1980. Aldrich Harrington joining Bernhard Langer, Kenny Perry, Alan Doyle, Hale Irwin, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player as a two-time winner of the most prestigious event in senior golf. Ryan, a lot of winners this weekend. Who jumped out at you as the most interesting?
I mean, to me, it has to be Potgieter. And you heard it in that sound in the interview with him post-round. He's been dealing with a little bit of the Sunday scaries. Look on the PGA Tour, you look last year on the DP World Tour as well. There certainly need to be a hurdle that he needed to clear, but he clicked back into that chase mode. I think that's what you saw over the final couple of hours. Putting more aggressively, hit the driver beautifully over that closing stretch, did not miss a fairway on the second nine, which obviously just gave him so many opportunities. He is such a prodigious driver of the golf ball that he has the physical capabilities and the tools to be really special. There's obviously a rawness to him, right? Like his wedge play is not very good. His short game is clearly a work in progress. But when you have the base that he does of putting the ball in play with such a distinct advantage over his peers, you can sort of get away with some of these inefficiencies in his game because, A, he has a lot of runway, and, B, he has the capability physically to overcome some of those.
Yeah, he's really unimpeachable at either end of the hole, both off the tee, and then he's top 30 on tour in putting as well. But how impressive is it that after he lost that playoff in Mexico, when he looked kind of raw and untested in that moment, he then missed 7 of 8 cuts, and the only one he made, he finished tied 47th, and he took a month off. He's come back with new equipment. He's shaken all of that off. It does suggest a guy who's actually, at the age of 20, he learns pretty quickly.
Oh, he certainly does. I mean, the second youngest winner of the British Amateur, broke the Korn Ferry Tour record. Jason Day held that record for about 15 years as the youngest winner on that circuit. His timeline is obviously accelerated. We talk about sort of the young rising stars in the game, and everyone sort of points to Ludvig Åberg. Ludvig Åberg turns 26 this fall.
Is that old in your mind, Ron?
That's old compared to Aldrich Pottengeter. So this is a kid who has the physical capabilities to be really special if his iron play improves, if his wedge play improves, if some of his short game is tidied up as well. I think we're looking at a potential top 10 player of the world.
Yeah, that short game is a little bit of an exposure out there. The winner at the weekend that actually interested me most is the one that would fire up all the bots. Patrick Reed won the LIV event, his first win on the LIV Tour in Dallas, and it's immediately started this conversation about whether or not Patrick Reed ought to be on the Ryder Cup team, which, as a European, I hope he is, because it's almost
guaranteed. He's 7-3 in 3 career appearances.
Yeah, well, you know, DJ played great in Ryder Cups 10 years ago as well, but he's not going to get a chance to do so this time around. And it's at a certain point, I think if you go back to the Gleneagles Ryder Cup, that's when the American team decided to prize unity over everything else. And that really became emphasized after Patrick Reed's contretemps in Paris with Jim Furyk after the 2018 Ryder Cup. So the idea, if you're Keegan Bradley and you have a deep bench on your team, the idea of introducing toxicity into the team room makes no sense whatsoever. And it doesn't get much more toxic than Team Reed in golf. The idea of introducing that into a team room when you don't need it just seems to me so outlandish, but I do hope as a European that it happens.
And that was one of the characteristics of Jim Furyk's President's Cup team last year, of which Keegan Bradley was a part, that he noticed. The inclusive culture, trying to treat everything like a family, bringing in the caddies, bringing in the wives. I think that is certainly a point worth bearing. Keegan Bradley, though, to counter this, has said repeatedly, I want the 12 best Americans regardless.
They never really mean that, though.
Of tour affiliation. Why not?
They mean the 12 best that they're willing to tolerate is usually what it means.
But Patrick Reed, if you look statistically, he's now a top 30 player, according to Data Golf. He's right in that category of a Harris English, a Matt McNealy, an Andrew Novak, all of the players who are probably
going to be considered.
It's not
just form that matters. I mean, Keegan was left out. Keegan said he was left out of the last team because he wasn't part of the boys' network. So clearly form isn't the only thing that matters.
Keegan is a big fan of passion, however. Keegan Bradley, his passion, his match play record, his current form. I think it's going to come down to how he plays at the Open Championship, the last opportunity for Patrick Reed to play against all of the best players in the world, not just some of them.
Well, it's time now for a Golf Today roundtable. We're going to welcome in Todd Lewis and Taylor Zarzar from Sirius PGA Tour Radio. Taylor, I want to start with you. You've been listening to this conversation. Who's more likely to be on the U.S. Ryder Cup team, Patrick Reed or Ryan Lavner?
Definitely Patrick Reed. Big fan of Lav's short game, but you have to be able to make a lot of putts if you're going to win at Bethpage Black. And look, I hear what you're saying, Eamon, and it's a dangerous proposition to put him on that team. But if you can putt and you can win points for the United States of America, I think that matters more than the way that you get along with people. And look, candidly, it gives you and me and everyone that loves the game of golf a lot to talk about. The guy is having a great year, not just on LIV. He's been in contention in major championships. So far in 2025, Patrick Reed looks like one of the 10 to 20 best American players. So I think he will be heavily considered in the months to come.
T-Lew, Keegan Bradley is going to have to sort of weigh his own resume against Patrick Reed's resume. As it relates specifically to Keegan, what do you need to see over these next couple months to potentially sway your opinion whether he should be remaining as the captain solely or also as a playing captain?
Well, I think he's already established himself as one of the top 12 Americans on the planet. And it's easy to make the argument that he should be on the team right now. If he continues to play consistently, then, yeah, he should be on the team. But you have to also ask yourself, if you're Keegan Bradley and if you're the PGA of America, where is Keegan Bradley the most important for the United States team? As a player or as a captain? And if he's a great player that can win you points, then, you know, maybe you kind of make Jim Furyk the pseudo U.S. captain. Or possibly, I mean, I haven't heard this idea, but maybe the PGA of America comes in and says, Keegan, we need you as a player. We'll give you a captaincy down the road, but let's let you concentrate on just being a player. Let Jim captain this team. But yeah, I think he's a good enough player. He's going to bring all that passion to Bethpage. A lot of players are going to want to play with him as a partner, but I think right now he's more important as a player than a captain.
Taylor, the Europeans have got to be loving this kind of lack of clarity around the captaincy and the duties and the potential addition of a Patrick Reed to the team, right?
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question about it. And the Europeans will play we're the underdog card, even though they're having the greatest start to any season I can remember. And they're the deepest team in recent memory, too. And by the way, T-Lew's not just a great karaoke singer and has great hair. He makes great opinions, too, clearly. Because if you listen to what he just said about Jim Furyk, I think that that is realistic, that Jim Furyk is, without whether it's public or not, the de facto captain of this American team. I think there's a real chance he's the privately he's the captain of the team, and Keegan still does the press conferences and acts as if he's the captain publicly. But while Patrick Reed being on the team is to be determined, I'd be shocked if Keegan Bradley is not playing on this team.
Todd, Aldrich Pottgeter, now a first-time winner on the PGA Tour. Where do you put him among the pantheon of top PGA Tour players or on the DP World Tour under the age of 25, the true young guns of the sport?
Yeah, I think he's one of the top 10 players in that group. I still think he's got some development. I mean, look, it wasn't the strongest field in Detroit, but he still won on the PGA Tour, which obviously is proven that it's hard to do. But he's been pretty inconsistent so far this season. I will say that what I noticed yesterday were a couple of things. Number one, his maturity, as you pointed out, Ryan, as he said in his press conference, when he lost that lead early in his round, which obviously he doesn't feel comfortable having a lead. When he lost that lead, he decided to change his mentality, to be a little more aggressive. So that was a good, mature switch by him. And secondly, just being in the fire that he has been in over the last year and a half, that par putt that he made on the 72nd hole, that was pretty clutch. And we showed you in the highlights, too, he needed another par putt to continue the playoff. I don't know if he would have made either one of those putts if he had not gone through what he went through in Mexico, if he had not gone through what he went through at Torrey and also last year at the NetBank Challenge when he kind of just threw up all over himself in the final round. But I think you learn a lot from adversities, obviously, and he's done so.
Taylor, how much frustration do you think Max Gracerman leaves with? Because he didn't do very much wrong yesterday, and he leaves with the frustration of a fourth, second-place finish on tour.
Yeah, and especially since he had a couple of putts to win there, Eamon, and not just in regulation. Well, he did in regulation, but then also in the sudden-death playoff. I'm certain Max is kicking himself. You know, we talked about Tommy Fleetwood and the close calls, and we have gone through all of that with Fleetwood for years. Max Gracerman feels a lot like Tommy Fleetwood did the week before after those missed opportunities. But he is having a great year. It is one of the best seasons he's had on the PGA Tour, and you would think he's going to give himself more opportunities. But each time we say that about someone, oh, Tommy Fleetwood will win coming up in a few weeks, or Max Gracerman will win later this year, it doesn't always work out that way. You know, when you lose an opportunity like that, you wonder, when will he get it again?
Tilu, off the golf course, there was another mandatory player meeting last week at the Rocket Classic, meeting with new PGA Tour CEO Brian Rolapp. What are you hearing from players after that meeting as it relates to the future of the PGA Tour?
Well, I'm hearing positive reviews from some of the players that I've had a chance to talk to. I think that a lot of them really like the idea. I don't know if it's accurate or not, but at least right now they're saying this. They like the idea that the new CEO is coming from outside of golf, coming from obviously a prominent tier sport in the NFL, and he's going to maybe bring some different fresh ideas. I mean, obviously he was very integral in helping grow the NFL into the giant that it is right now, and they feel like maybe that he can do that same, use that same energy and that same magic with the PGA Tour. But Rolapp seems to be very much invested in this, very much invested in the players, very much in growing the fan base. So initially right now, although he hasn't given a lot of ideas, the attitude is very, very positive towards the players, and the players are receiving it.
Well, we're going to continue discussing the important issues in this game. Coming up next is actually going to be whether or not announcers are obliged to look for a player's lost golf ball. We're going to be right back.
And continuing on golf today, here are just some of the images from yesterday at Detroit Golf Club as Aldrich Potgieter won in a three-man playoff to secure his first career PGA Tour victory. And here's a look at the PGA Tour's upcoming schedule. The tour heads to the Quad Cities this week for the John Deere Classic. First round coverage beginning Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. That's overseas to North Berwick for the Scottish Open. Let's continue the conversation, this roundtable, with Todd Lewis and Taylor Zarzer. Taylor, I want to start with you. Colin Morikawa had an incident with a reporter from Golf Week, Adam Shupak, last week at the Rocket Classic, sort of bristling at his portrayal and how he is being portrayed in the media. What's going on here with PGA Tour players, media members, and the supposed friction between the two?
Well, first of all, I blame Eamon for all of this. I mean, the all of a sudden how contentious things are between the media and the players. But in all seriousness, I think that Colin Morikawa is frustrated, guys. He hasn't won on the PGA Tour this year. It's been a while since he's won anywhere in the world. He's had some close calls, most notably what happened at Bay Hill. He's gone through two caddies now. So I don't think that he is as approachable right now as he's ever been. So I think it has a lot more to do with just what's going on with Colin right now on the golf course. And he's a bit frustrated by the fact that he's not been able to cross the line yet. So I think that probably has everything to say about why he was frustrated. I don't know that it was necessary for him to call out Adam in the press conference there, but maybe he felt that Adam should have approached him in a different spot than when he was on the first tee talking to his pro-am partners. But I think ultimately this has to do with the way that Colin is playing. He's giving himself a chance, but Colin doesn't want just a chance. Colin wants to be the best player in the world, and he's not. He's one of the 10 to 15 best players in the world, and that's not good enough for him. He's holding himself to a higher standard.
Todd, the same dynamic is visible over on the senior tour at the weekend. There was not so much a contentious discussion, I'd say a spirited discussion, between Padraig Harrington and Roger Maltby at the senior open over whether or not Roger was obliged to help look for Padraig Harrington's ball when he was following the group. Where do you fall in that argument?
Well, Eamon, first off, Padraig Harrington is in the World Golf Hall of Fame, deservedly so. And if there was a World Golf Hall of Fame of golf broadcasters, Roger Maltby would be in the first class. There's no doubt about that. These are two giants in their industry, and Roger obviously was a proven winner on the PGA Tour as well. I think Padraig kind of got this one wrong. Look, it happens out there when if you're a broadcaster. I've seen broadcasters help players look for balls. I've even, while following group, helped players look for balls. I know, Eamon, given the fact you have such a great spirit of service, you would do the same thing. But Roger also has a job to do. His mortgage is paid by NBC. And if you have a producer in your ear telling you to report on what's going on, then that eliminates you from the opportunity to help search for a ball. Padraig felt like he should have helped search for a ball. And if he wasn't reporting, yes, he probably would have. But Roger tried to explain that to Padraig. Padraig didn't quite understand it. So therein lies the tension. Roger was doing his job. Padraig was concerned about finding the ball. I understand, according to my man Mark Wolfing, that they did have a chat about this on Sunday. Podrick apologized. Roger accepted. So now these two giants move on.
To your point, I did tell Ryan earlier if we were the only two people on the golf course, I wouldn't actually search for his lost ball.
Shocking.
Taylor, we've had a couple of temper incidents in golf that have gotten a lot of publicity recently. If you go back to the PGA Championship and Wyndham Clark after a poor tee shot, and you see here he just sort of launches his driver backwards against the signage, getting dangerously close to one of the volunteers there and destroying the club in the process. And then there was a similar incident this past weekend at the LIV event in Dallas. Brooks Koepka, who withdrew during this round feeling sick, hits a lousy tee shot, smashes this little tee marker, and the shocking thing is that there were actually spectators there who were in danger of this. Are we at the point now where this is... we're getting very close to somebody actually being injured in a situation like this? Does it require action? Or should we actually just kind of welcome this as more theater?
It's unacceptable. No, I mean, like you said, I know you're shocked that there were people there, but there were people there, and there were people at Quail Hollow on the 16th tee, too, and it came very close to hitting that man that was right near that sign when Wyndham Clark did that. So, no, we shouldn't be waiting until someone is injured and something happens, which, of course, then they would be penalized if that happens. But when there are people all around, you can't be doing that and acting like a child. That's totally unacceptable behavior. And I have nothing personally against either one of them, but it's just the action. And there should be consequences for those actions. There's no place in golf for what we just showed you on television.
Todd, speaking of LIV, Sergio Garcia got the open exemption by finishing among the top five, not already exempt. Are you satisfied with just one spot into a major championship, or do you think that LIV deserves more?
I think I'm satisfied with just one spot right now. I mean, until, you know, I just don't think, I just, to be honest with you, I just don't think that they have the depth. They have a smaller field, first off, and secondly, they just don't have the depth and quality players. So I think this is a proper choice by the RNA. And you know, you talk about Patrick Reed maybe being on the United States team. If Sergio Garcia can parlay this opportunity into something positive at Royal Portrush, we could be talking about Sergio Garcia possibly being on that team, because he and Luke Donald have a great relationship. And if Sergio can show some form moving forward, who knows? But yeah, I'm okay with the number right now.
Well, it is called an open championship for a reason, I guess. Todd, yep. Taylor, always appreciate the insight. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Well, we are in the waning hours of June, which is always one of the biggest months in this game. We're going to take a look back at the highlights after this break, and maybe one low light as well. Stay with us. We're back on Golf Today. Yesterday at the U.S. Senior Open at the Broadmoor Golf Club in Colorado Springs, Padraig Harrington earned his second title in the past 4 years in the Silver Circuit's most prestigious event. Harrington shot a final round of 3 under par 67 to beat Stuart Sink by a single shot. It's time now for the best part, presented by Uncrustables. And if we're looking back at some of the best moments of this past month, this belongs on any list. JJ Spaun's birdie putt on the 72nd hole of the US Open at Oakmont Country Club. He needed two putts to secure his first major championship victory, but JJ went one better and drained it from 64 feet to take the victory.
And another great moment from the month of June, a walk-off win for Keegan Bradley in the Travelers Championship. Bradley made birdie right here on the 72nd hole to turn the tables on Tommy Fleetwood and win by a shot. The win vaulted Keegan inside the top 10 in the U.S. Ryder Cup standings. And look, J.J. Spaun's putt is the one that's going to be replayed for eons. To me, the best moment of that U.S. Open was actually his drive on 17 and the drive on 18 in particular. That week was all about brutality and sort of a binary outcome. You hit the fairway, you might make par. You miss the fairway, you're almost guaranteed to make a bogey. For J.J. Spaun to stand up on that tee and hit the seed that he did to win the U.S. Open, to me, was even more impressive than
the
putt.
Were you surprised at how well he held up in that moment?
Certainly. Yeah, because we didn't see that happen at the Players' Championship, particularly in the three-hole playoff with Rory McIlroy. This was a very unfamiliar position for him. But the way that he sort of battled back from an uneven start a nervy start. The reset that he had was very similar to what happened at the Players' Championship. This time he actually finished it off.
I'd pick the moment in June that really stood out to me, I think, was Minji Lee at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship out in Frisco, Texas. And not just because she got to three wins, which is pretty rarefied air when you're into that category now, but it was the manner in which she held on as well, because you're talking about a really daunting weather conditions. It was a tricky golf course. It was a controversial setup. There were six-hour rounds. And I actually would argue that is probably the grittiest performance that we are going to see all year in any tour, is what Minji Lee delivered there. But it also raises some interesting questions, because she had a good week. The PGA of America did not have a good week. And that's not just talking about the controversy of the setup, because players are prone to complain about that anyway. But the optics were bad, because it looked as though a women's major was being conducted on a construction site. And that simply wouldn't be allowed to happen with the men. And we also had a situation where a golf course that was built explicitly to host PGA of America major championships, they had announced two PGA championships, a senior PGA and the women's, before the golf course was even finished. And yet in the first major of scale, they actually had to rewrite the golf course to accommodate the infrastructure. And worse than any of that is that you get not a single memorable shot or hole anywhere on the back nine of that golf course that is going to build momentum and drama around a major championship, which you'd think, if that was the marching order and we know what this course is going to be used for, you should have a kind of, you know, a sawgrass element to it, where people and spectators and fans and viewers are going to know that's going to be a decisive moment. Doesn't exist in that golf course, and it doesn't bode well for a PGA championship 2 years down the road.
I was going to say, you're looking forward to the PGA in 2 years' time. It, obviously, the golf course can be tweaked. It cannot be tweaked significantly enough for a PGA championship in 2 years' time. Having a women's PGA in mid-June, we know the temperatures are going to be brutally hot. Some of the hole locations, players like Nelly Korda, the world number one, were saying were inaccessible. Was not a good week for the PGA of America.
And certainly not with six-hour rounds. As well, with the LPGA Tour's only team event wrapped up yesterday, Somi Lee made this 8-foot birdie putt on the first hole of a playoff to win the Dow Championship with her fellow South Korean Jin Hee Im. The putt denied Lexi Thompson her first LPGA Tour title in 6 years. She was teamed up with Megan Kang. And let's take a look at who is who and where in the race to the CME Globe. Well, the 2024 race to the CME Globe champion Gino Thittakum continues to hold the top spot in the rankings. She's got one win in seven top tens this season. And Minji Lee, of course, on the strength of that major victory in the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, is currently in the number two spot.
And let's check in on the Epson Tour, the road to the LPGA. Former Georgia Bulldog great Jillian Hollis earned her fourth career victory on that tour and her first since 2022. Hollis began the day trailing by three shots before setting the 54-hole tournament scoring record. The tour now heads into a one-week break. Emma Golf Today rolls on. We're checking in with GolfChannel.com senior writer and my podcast partner, Rex Hoggard, as we touch on all the biggest storylines and winners from the weekend that was in golf. Stay tuned.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
And back on Golf Today, the PGA Tour is in the Quad Cities this week for the John Deere Classic. You can catch live first-round coverage this Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. Let's take a look at some of the notables in the field this week at the John Deere Classic. Luke Clanton still looking for his first top 30 as a professional. Ricky Fowler, now number 72 in the FedEx Cup standings. And Max Homa, all the way down to 122, looking for his first top 10 since May 2024. If you're in the market for a podcast, check out the Golf Channel podcast with Rex Hoggard and yours truly. A new one dropped this morning. And if you missed any of Golf Today, you can find our best interviews in the Golf Today podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page. And speaking of Rex, pleased to be joined by him now. Rex, we had a spirited discussion earlier in the show about Patrick Reed. When you look at sort of the Ryder Cup bubble for the U.S. team in particular, those guys between, let's say, numbers 18 and number 10, where are you putting Patrick Reed? Do you think he's actually a realistic threat to make the American squad?
I thought the conversation we had on the pod this morning was funny on that as well, because Matt Adams actually threw Patrick Reed out as a possible pick last week, and I think both you and I had a collective eye roll thinking to ourselves that if you're going to pick a live player, I'm not quite sure I would have gone to Patrick Reed right off the top last week. But certainly getting that win on LIV Golf, how he performed coming down the stretch, he gave up a big lead, but he was able to turn it around in the playoff. He certainly would bring a lot of fire to that team. He would bring experience, which I think is going to be very important. But I'm not quite sure. I'm almost leaning towards Eamon's argument on this one, that he's not a perfect fit for that team room right now. If I'm looking at that bubble, I think there's two players that stand out to me right now, and it's Andrew Novak and Mav McNealy. And this has everything to do with they have certainly played well enough this season to not only deserve consideration from Captain Keegan Bradley, but to probably have an inside track to be one of the picks how we stand right now. My bigger concern isn't about how they play or who they are as players. It has more to do with the idea of roster construction. We know going into Bethpage Black, this is going to be such a different atmosphere. This is going to be so intense. And it looks like the Keegan's already going to have a couple rookies on that team. And I would just be leery of picking a rookie with one of your six picks.
The last couple of weeks haven't seen European winners, Rex, but they're pretty good weeks if you're Luke Donald. I mean, Keegan winning really puts himself in the frame. Patrick Reed winning puts him in the frame. I mean, Luke Donald has got to be loving this just in terms of the distractions, the narratives that are going to follow the US team all the way to Bethpage.
Can you imagine the messaging that's going to go up on that team room at Bethpage by the time we get there later this year? With first, you can start with the idea of the U.S. players being paid to play in the Ryder Cup. I can only imagine what Luke is going to do with that golden piece of opportunity. And now you consider Keegan Bradley as a possible playing captain and all that means and all the complications that it would bring to the table. And you're right. You add a Patrick Reed or even a Bryson DeChambeau to that mix, and suddenly you start looking over your shoulder and wondering yourself, who should actually be favored in these matches? Because certainly Luke Donald as a known commodity. We know he's a really good captain based on what he did in Rome. And we don't know about Keegan Bradley. He could turn out to be a brilliant captain. But I kind of lean in the category, and I was listening to the conversation earlier that Todd Lewis just made. Is Keegan Bradley better off being a player for that team? Is he more important to the U.S. side as a player than a captain? I think it's a conversation we're going to be having for the next few weeks.
Rex, obviously the Open Championship is going to go a long way in determining who are on those respective teams. Final qualifying for the Open is tomorrow on Tuesday. Who are some of the names that you're keeping your eye on?
You two are going to hate me for this. I'm going to get angry text after this, and I hope none of our bosses are listening. But I'm almost leaning towards a Golf's Longest Day 2.0. Just the idea that we could be at Royal Cinque for that qualifier tomorrow. Could you look at the field? There's so many compelling storylines. I would volunteer to do that. You start with Ian Poulter and his son, Luke Poulter, are both playing. Ian's trying to get back to the Open Championship for the first time since 2022 and playing alongside your son. That's pretty cool. Luke almost qualified for the U.S. Open at Oakmont. I think that would be a fun story. Probably the one I'm looking at is Graham McDowell. At 45 years old, I don't know how many more opportunities he's going to get to play in an Open Championship in Northern Ireland. That would mean the world to him. He had an opportunity to play in the Open in 2019, made the cut there. You know how much it means to him. I just think it would be cool to be there and cover it. You guys don't yell at me right now, please.
I think that actually would be potentially the best story that could come out of tomorrow, unless, of course, we have Poulter father and son in a two-for-one playoff, which I think would be great entertainment. Speaking of playoffs, Rex, Lexi Thompson lost one yesterday, and there's been some confusion over the nomenclature of whether she retired or simply walked away from a full-time schedule. But she does seem to be playing better since the announcement last year that she wasn't going to be part of that daily grind. Do you think she just needed the mental freedom of saying, you know what, I'm not on the hamster wheel anymore, even if she is playing pretty much as she used to?
I feel like all of us on some level would embrace semi-retirement at this point. And no, I feel like that's what we all kind of want. So having the opportunity to kind of pick and choose what you want to do. I would go back and point to Tiger Woods over the last 5, 6, 7 years before injuries really set in, when he had such a limited schedule. And then when he would show up, there was such a fire that we hadn't seen for a few years. There was such a passion that he was playing for because he knew these were going to be limited opportunities. I think it can be a serious grind when you're a professional golfer, certainly when you did it as long as Lexi did. And stepping away, getting a new perspective, getting some rest, learning to miss it a little bit, I think that could all factor into this, yeah.
Rick, if you show the graphic, the notables in the field for the John Deere Classic, the strongest field that this tournament has had in years. With the move now from 125, the top 100 keeping their cards for 2026, could you make an argument that sort of these late season full field events are actually better off after this move?
I think you can, because now it means so much. I was thinking about this morning, that we're only a few weeks away from having the conversation that the guy who finishes 101st on the money list at the end of the regular season isn't going to keep his card. Whereas for the past few decades, you've probably felt like you've had a pretty good season. And it's just a number, but it puts it into context about how the goalpost has changed for these players. I think every event, starting with last week, is going to see a bit of an improvement when you start talking about players in the field that normally would bypass it. Max Homa being a primary example. I'm guessing he probably wouldn't be playing this week if it was still at 125, or at least he would have considered it. And I think players more and more over the next, I think there's four more full field events left on the calendar before we get to the playoffs. They're all going to flock to these events hoping to improve, whether if you're inside or out, because you can always improve your status either way.
Not even July and the Hunger Games start early on the PGA Tour. Earlier and earlier every year, it seems. Rex, always good to catch up with you.